Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we're very pleased to welcome back Jeff Triplett. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. You two sound exactly like you do when I listen to it in the podcast. I thought that was like a pre-recording or something, but...
No, we do it live every time.
That's why there's the occasional error. You have to spot that.
I think it's like seats in class. The first one you pick, you have to stay with. Like, there's no reason we do the intro that way. It's just we did it once that way, and it's easier than thinking about it. But anyway, so Jeff, I don't know if you don't need much introduction, but very briefly, you're partner at RevSys. You're on the board of the PSF. You help with our former past president, still involved with DEFNA, which runs US Django cons. You've taken over DjangoPackages.org. We'll talk about that. You and I do the Django News newsletter together. And you also are a consultant, so you just see lots of Django in the wild. So always have stories about how it's being used or misused. So I'll use that as a preamble. you have a 5-month-old. So I won't try to ask too deep questions of you in this interview because I know how that goes.
I have the opposite problem of new parents is that I actually got a full night's sleep last night, so I don't know how to function like sleep again. So sorry for being rambly.
The trouble when you do get a little bit more sleep is your body goes, oh, more of that, please.
Yeah, it's like, what is this not being totally dead asleep feeling I have? But yeah.
So this will be, I think, even for us, a casual conversation. But I did want to quickly mention for the Django Software Foundation, we will be doing a PyCharm promotion this year. After all, they took a pause, but it's going to be happening beginning of June. So if you're thinking about trying out PyCharm, wait a week. You'll get 30% off most likely, and all the proceeds go to Django. So that'll be happening in June. Normally we do it in the spring. It got delayed, but it is happening in June. So that'll be on the Django Project website soon. Carlton, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to ask Jeff about DjangoCon because I filled in my submit to talk application yesterday, and I'm very excited about it coming up because it's been, you know, a long, hard slog for everybody these last couple of years. So, Jeff, can you what's going on? When's DjangoCon? When's the call for participation open? And you know, what do we need to know about that?
Sure thing. Yeah, DjangoCon US will be this October. We are very hopeful that pandemic and everything subsides enough that we can have a safe conference. Biggest thing for us is making sure kids under 5 can have vaccinations and stuff too. That way everybody, the whole population is covered. The deadline for the CFP for submitting your proposal, we're doing talks and tutorials this year. I think it's June 10th. So it's the fun Python AOE time. So as long as it's been, I guess, June 10th somewhere in the world, then you're good.
All right. We'll have links to that in the show notes.
And you're not organizing it this year. Is that right?
I am. I've tried to step back a little bit and give others space. The hardest part has been because we haven't had a physical conference in 3 years. We haven't had the normal supply of volunteers come in. Now, the last month we actually have had, which has been really interesting. So we're getting some new people who've kind of raised their hands and said, we want to help. But then also it's this burden of like, do you really know what you're getting into? So we're trying to, how do I get out from under this thing without crushing somebody else? Not that I'm Superman of this thing. There's a ton of great people who do a lot of great work, but I've kind of been one of the primary people who kind of know what the dots are, the cadence is, and just kind of helping, advising. So this year I'm hoping to be mostly just advising, mentoring. But yeah, I'm doing my best to try, especially with a 5-month-old, as you said, and a 4.5-year-old. It's just not that where I want to put all my time in at the end of the day, even though I love the conference and I look forward to being there. So
yeah, I think the thing that's really hit, not hit because everything's going on to plan with GenCon Europe as well, is that because we haven't had it for a couple of years, there's sort of like this gap in the continuity. And so, you know, a seasoned hand like yourself, it's, even if you're not doing it, to have you around is really important, to have like that knowledge.
And we do, you know, again, we have people who have been around for 5 years, 6 years helping with the conference, still helping. So like, it is not just me by any means. A lot of great people are back. I think too, well, last year was really interesting because we did a virtual and the previous 2 years didn't do one. And so the thing I think is funny is I know there's been a lot of people say like, there's not a lot of interest for online virtual conferences, but The opposite was true with us. We had 2,200 people sign up for the conference last year. Now, granted, it was free, so you get a whole lot more free people, but that's technically bigger than PyCon US was last year. And we really just kind of planned on putting videos out over 2 days and not really being as interactive as we kind of last minute had to be. The person who was doing our AV work, Adam Fast, his wife was due to have a baby like a couple days after DjangoCon. Because, you know, that's how we schedule things.
That's always how it works. Okay?
Dates are announced. And it's like, oh, crap. So his wife went into labor on Monday night before the conference. And thankfully they had a little bit of a delay. But there were like four or five talks that he's like, what do we do? I'm like, well, I guess those talks will go up a week or two or a month later. Like, it'll be fine. So, yeah, we've all had so much family stuff over the last 3 years, as everybody's had. It just wasn't worth it for us to do it. So, returning to in-person will be interesting. We'll probably scale some things back. I don't know if we're going to do two tracks this year or one track. Let's try to spread tables out, maybe make the room bigger. We also put out our call for venues. So if you live in North America and you want to host DjangoCon US next year, what is it called? CFV, call for venue, is up. So we're going to do our best to not be back in San Diego, even though we've only been there 3 years. It feels like it's been five or six because of not having the conference for 3 years.
Yeah, no, entirely. Can I ask a little bit about virtual versus in-person? And is there going to remain a virtual element? Because I've really missed the in-person conference, but also the virtual ones have been really good. But I've seen lots of comments saying, hey, I wasn't able to come. And, you know, to have the virtual is also, is there going to be a mixed format thing, or what's your thought in that area?
Sure. So the hard part about me saying I want to step back is that when things like this come up and it requires more work, and I'm kind of the one who's like, I really want to do this part, or I want this to be an emphasis, then our philosophy has always been, don't volunteer unless you're willing to do the work. And then there's very few things that we turn down if you're willing to put in the effort and do the work. So my view, and then there's a monthly conference organizer thing. I'll have to find a link to it and stuff. I don't even know what we call it, but there's a couple of us that have been doing it for a long time. John from PyGotham. Elaine from PyCon Canada. We've been doing this chat thing for probably 4 or 5 months, or sorry, 3 or 4 years. And it's like the first, I think, or second Wednesday of the month. I could not have done a worse introduction for that thing possible, I'll try to make it even worse next time.
Infant pass. All right. It's all good then.
So this is a topic that we talk about a lot on our like monthly organizer. Anybody can go to it. So basically, I think the days of only in-person conferences are over. I think philosophy-wise, you have to design for a hybrid or online first experience and bring that to an actual event. Otherwise, I think it's going to suck to be there because no one wants to see cameras in the back of the room and do a virtual experience where you're seeing the tops of everybody's heads. And so how we pull that off, I'm not sure, but it's kind of been my feeling as I've seen conferences return. And everybody wants to try to bolt on a hybrid experience because it's more money and it's low effort. And so I don't know who all, well, this is probably before your time, but Carlton, were you at Django Under the Hood way back when?
No. I for some strange reason, I sat using Django forever. And it wasn't until Florence 2017 that I went to a DjangoCon. And then I was like, this is what I've been missing for a while.
Nice.
I think 16 was the last Under the Hood, right?
Gosh, something I think like so. 16, 17, something like
I've
that.
I've seen the videos from it, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, Django Under the Hood.
Yeah, I'm well researched today. So one thing they did a really good job of is curating the talks as they went through the day. And they kind of did it in a way that forced people into either a Slack or something. So you could ask questions, but you had to ask it and they curated on the fly. I don't know that that's something that we can pull off or want to pull off, but I think it's a more interesting format if the people that are watching from remote can submit questions and then kind of feel like they're a part of the conference. So if there's a way we can pull it off, so if you're remote, that you feel like you're part of the conference is what I want to try to emphasize. Obviously, being in person, you can go by the pool afterwards, have your happy hour, do whatever you want to do, meet up with people that you couldn't meet up with probably online, or it'd be a little harder. But we want to try to like cater to an experience that doesn't suck online. And that's where I think it has to be prioritized, that, you know, be kind of online first with, you know, all the benefits that you get for being in person.
I mean, one thought that comes to mind, but you talked about the camera. It's always been at the back of the room traditionally, but, you know, a stand-up act always has the, you know, the camera at the front in with the front row, right? So maybe there's a space, you know, to have a camera at the front to get a decent you know, video of the person on stage.
Yeah, it's going to be all metaverse this year then. It's going to be all virtual avatars, 3D projections, and all the technology that no one bothered to, you know, perfect yet. But no, we'll have to shift some stuff around, and then maybe by spreading people out and a different room set up, we'll you know, make that a little easier.
I think that the questions is sort of exciting about hybrid, because of the two talks I've given, sometimes there's a lot of questions and sometimes there isn't, you know, because it's the end of the day or whatever. But if you have lots of people online, it's always nice, you know, if you're open to taking them. I always like having the questions, and sometimes where people are shy in person, right? Sometimes people would, like, right after the talk come up and ask me a question, and it's like, well, I'm happy to answer it, but I would have almost preferred to answer that publicly because others probably had it. So, you know, so that hybrid approach maybe will lead to more questions is what I'm trying to say, which I know not all speakers want to take those live, but if you do.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I wouldn't say we discourage people from taking questions, but we definitely don't make them feel the pressure to do a Q&A. It's kind of like, you can do it if you really want to and shave off about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes of your time. That way we can try to get questions. But, you know, like, here's our schedule and here's what we're trying to do. We also, I think, want to try to have a deep dive day again. And again, I might be just making this up. I think we've said on the website we want to do it. If we get enough talks that meet that format, we would kind of like to have a very focused, go a little deeper in the Django than maybe what some talks would be. We figure after 2 days of intro talks too, and, you know, we have a whole selection of beginner, intermediate, advanced talks, but we figure after 2 days, even if you're new to Django, maybe you will have recognized and picked up enough in those that period of time that the third day hearing into some of the, maybe whether it's Django internals or shift the advanced talks maybe. But so Carlton, I look forward to your deep dive into something.
Can we
thanks for the
can
pressure
we talk
there,
about
Jeff.
It or do we not want to prejudge his talk, because he and I were just talking about his is it okay to talk about his proposal, or would you rather should we wait until it's accepted or not, Jeff, his topic, because it is an advanced one that's interesting to me.
Yeah, we probably should shy away from it. If this is going to be out tomorrow, then if this was to come out after, then
also there's a certain amount of you know, suspense. I want you to, you know, have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, because anyway, I'm going to read everyone. So yeah, that's right.
No, but, I don't want spoilers. You know, I wouldn't talk about, you know, the upcoming Obi-Wan Kenobi series if I'd happened to have seen that.
Yeah, I mean, someone might submit your exact idea plus one thing that makes it better, right? So you might get
That's not what I mean. That's what I mean is, when you turn up for the talk on the day, you want a little bit of, you know, what's this about? You don't want to have heard it all on some ropey podcast. What's it going to talk about?
Yeah, we could just put a big emoji question mark next to your name on the schedule, and then, you know, you surprise us all.
One more question about DjangoCon, and then let's move on. Who should submit to talk, Jeff?
Anybody, everybody, something in the realm of Django, web, accessibility, anything that makes you better at Django, better human, just in general. It's, the bar is pretty, you know, we want the conference to be accessible to, you know, life skills or anything that makes you a better, whether developer, writer, what do they call them, documentarian, anything in the scope of what we do as far as an industry goes, so.
So don't be shy.
Yeah, and a lot of people are new to Django that give talks every year, and they're some of the better talks. So don't, just because you haven't spent that much time on Django doesn't mean you can't come up with something that would be, you know, advantageous for the community.
Yeah, I really like the beginner talks because it provides a different lens on Django for those of us who've been there for a while. And, you know, as you think about, oh, yeah, middleware is kind of confusing, or it's also, if you have coworkers who are new to Django, it's a way to get in their head a bit more if somebody says, hey, I'm new to Django and this was my experience. So there's a lot of value in that perspective. It doesn't have to be deep dives. Deep dives are fun too, but there's sort of an endless source to me anyways of the beginner experience on Django, which I kind of get a lot of just from emails with readers, but I think a lot of professional Django people don't. So, yeah.
So your talk's going to be about your emails and stuff. If Django would fix, you would get less email. Is that the
No, I know. I'm I next year I'm going to submit, be back to doing talks. I have a plan for a 30,000 foot view of Django and web frameworks, like a how do the pieces all fit together kind of way that I think would be interesting. So
there's plenty of time till October. Come on.
Plus, I think it's, you know, so if, you know, talks I would like to see, I need to write a blog post up on this, which means I'm just going to tweet, not blog, because it's just easier. But like, you know, HTMX is super exciting. I think anything that makes SPA apps, you know, your single page apps easier is cool. HTMX is doing some awesome server-side rendering stuff. There's other frameworks. I think Django Unicorn doesn't get enough emphasis too. Those are super cool. The PyScript stuff is amazing. Like, I've wanted Django that runs in my browser so templates get rendered for years. I just can't get, like, I don't make decisions in Django to make this stuff happen, but I would love to see, you know, nice PyScript Django. Like, what does it look like for Django to run in PyScript in your browser? Like, that would be so cool. So I don't know. I'll come up with a tweet thread or something and try to, like, you know, give some ideas out. But
the best, I'd have to say, when I went to Florence, my first DjangoCon, you know, I thought it was all going to be technical talks, and you know, that's why I'd signed up to go. And but the best talks, the ones that really stuck with me, were the community talks. They were about cognitive biases and inclusion, and I don't know, community building and team diversity in teams. Well, that's what inspired me to do my talk in Heidelberg, was that I went to Florence and I was like, oh well, actually this, that was, I was just blown away by those talks, and they were nothing to do with Django per se, you know. They were people in the Django community giving those talks, but they weren't technical talks. And so, you know, I gave my talk in Heidelberg on what I did, because I was like, oh wow, can I give a talk like that? Maybe. But so yeah, anything, but do submit.
Absolutely. Like, what would you two like to see?
I like testing talks. I'm really on a, I would love to see more about testing, just how people do it, different approaches, because it feels like a somewhat undefined thing to me beyond the basics, how it's actually done. I've added a plug. So I got the 4.0 version of my Django for Professionals book just out. So all my books are 4.0, which is a big update for all of them. I had a lot more testing, but testing is just endless. I would just love to see how people test stuff, thoughts and strategies, doing coverage, you know, integrating PyTest, continuous integration. I just think that's bottomless, and I don't see any great resource for doing it other than whatever the company already has or whatever go-to approaches you have. I've been trying to get you, Jeff, to do a book or something on testing, because you know a little bit about it. I think I like your line that you get paid to write tests, not code. Can I say that publicly?
I think you, you make things that I say sound good, or I don't remember saying them. So thank you for having a better memory than me. But
I think it was in the content. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so sometimes, testing. Yeah, that is sometimes true for clients. But yeah, I write code too, but it's, you know, being able to like ship something that, you know, is repeatable, it's not going to break. It's an underappreciated value, I guess. So
I would say deployment is the other one. There's been interesting threads about, you know, Heroku had some issues, and quite a few Django people have worked at Heroku, and it's a sticky wicket to make deployment work well. But that's one as well, like something between Kubernetes and a one-line script. Like, how do you get there? And I know, Carlton, that's near and dear to your heart. You're still plugging away with button.
Yeah,
you know,
it's still coming on very well. We were talking about it before we came on. Before you came on, Jeff, I was talking to Will. He was like, "Well, come on, you've got to ship it." I'm like, "Okay, I'll ship it." But I'm building.
Move fast and break things, Carlton.
Well, yeah. But no,
it's just deployment. It's just deployment. You know,
it's just deployment. It's easy. It's go slowly and build something that you care about and want to work on for, you know, an extended period. So I was building native apps, and you know, the one reason why it's been so slow is because it's like, okay, well, I have to relearn Swift, because I'm like, I'll build a Mac app, Swift, I know Swift. No, I don't know the modern frameworks. I haven't used them for half a dozen years. To relearn that has taken quite a big chunk, but now it's coming together. It's like, okay, yes, actually, this is fun. And then I was just about to ship Mac only, and then I had a potential customer come along and say, well, can I pay you to use it as a, you know, and you can work out some, I mean, of course, that's the perfect, you know, that's the perfect test environment. And they were on Windows. And I was like, ah, I haven't got a Windows story yet. So I had to learn all about, what am I going to do? So I investigated .NET and, you know, what's going on now? I'm like, maybe. well, Java. And then the thing I've kind of settled on for my Windows story is to use Rust. And there's a packaging system called Tori, which is like Electron, but it's a much lighter weight. And, you know, the bundles come out at sort of about 5 megabytes, and they use the native web view, so you're not running this Chromium instance. You know the jokes about running Slack or Teams that they take up the whole. It's not like that, and so I think that will be my Windows story, and so that's all coming together. But that to learn Swift again took me much longer than I ever gave that credit for, and then to learn Rust and to learn these things and to investigate that's all the backstory that took a long time. But that's okay, because I haven't been in a rush, and I'm not building like a Heroku competitor. I'm not building a platform. I'm building tooling to, you know, communicate with those. So that's all been fun. And then obviously the last 2 years have been tricky. And then the start of this year, I was knocked a bit sideways and my family were ill. And so that wasn't a good start. But last year at DjangoCon Europe, I said summer 2021, and reviewing that, it's going to be summer 2022.
I was rewatching your talk, and I sent you the screenshot of that slide.
you said it was going to be 2021. Well, it's going to be 2022, so that's fine.
My advice you didn't ask for would be, assuming you both are at DjangoCon US this year, is that Will and I will publish it for you if it's not done. So we can have the moment where you deploy it.
I've got
the perfect thing. I'll have a button that you can click to deploy.
There you go. We can do that near the pool at in San Diego.
It's I've been talking about it for a long time, working on it for even longer, and it is and it's coming nicely, and I'm very happy. All I can say is, well, you know, it's going to be worth waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be ready when it's ready. And what are you doing? I mean, you're embedding Python, I assume, inside your application?
Well, actually, it turns out that I'm going to use Rust for the bits which aren't...
Such a hipster.
I know, I was like, I can't lose you, Carlton. This is where good Python developers go. No, they go to Rust.
This is where it all went. Just like I was looking. I looked at the Python embedding story, and frankly, it's terrible. And there's some great work being done to make it much better, but I can't ship you an app and say, oh, can you please jump through all these hoops? I can't do it. Like, it wouldn't be an app that I would be happy to ship and live with. So on Mac, it's going to be Swift based and then with a Rust core. And then on Windows, it will be Rust with a web interface with Tori on there. And then the web app will be the web app. And it will be those components. But on the server component that you ship is a single Rust binary that you just download, stick where you want, and run. Ultimately, it had to be that way. And I took a long time investigating the various Python packaging solutions. And they are coming on massively, but they just aren't there right now and weren't there at the time.
Well, I was thinking about why Swift took you a minute to learn. It's also because you're still fellowing, and
yes,
4.1 feature freeze has happened.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about coming in August?
The feature freeze was last week, and I've been I'm release manager for 4.1, so it's a lot harder.
There's a lot in there. Can you tell us?
Okay,
the highlights?
So we've got 8 class-based views can define async handlers. So you can write a class, my view, subclass is view, def, async def get, and then you can do your async handler there. We haven't worked through all the class-based views to be async, and maybe we probably never will. But if you're into class-based views, you don't have to drop into a different idiom now to write an async handler. So that's kind of cool. Then the ORM has gained an async interface, so you can do async, also you can do await my model filter dot get whatever, and it will stream out the objects to you in an async way. Underneath it's still the sync ORM. We're still working on integrating the drivers and getting the compiler to be async compatible, and that work will continue. But you can now write from 4.1, you can write an async view with an async interface to the ORM, and that will pick up any performance improvements just as you update Django in the future, rather than you having to rewrite your code. So that's kind of like the, yeah, I can write async views. And to be honest, the limit here is not threat, you know. So at the moment, the way the ORM works, so in 3.2, we had this problem with thread sensitivity of ORM operations, such that basically any operation, ORM operation, was single threaded. It only go one at a time, and so your requests become one at a time, and that's not great performance. From 4.0, it's per request, the thread sensitivity of the ORM. So that's a big speed up, because you can more or less, with, as long as you don't have too many open connections at once, you can process them in parallel, because there's one per thread. More or less now, the situation is that your blocker isn't the speed of the async. It isn't using threads. It's number of connections to your database, and it's the number of times you're... So until we get fully async drivers, there's not going to be any big speed up there. So the async code as you have now is going to be nice and performant, nice and fast. Yes, it's going to use threads to connect to the ORM, but that's fast enough for most cases. How'd I get into that?
4.1 features. And I'm curious, say drivers, PsychoPG, I think there's like a new PsychoPG 3.
Right. So there's a draft pull request to integrate PsychoPG 3. And then what about SQLi? What about Oracle? What about MySQL? There's a lot of, you know, the ORM wraps up a lot of complexity for you. With the big issue now you're going to find is we're finally at the point. So when you started Node.js all these years ago and you ran up the Node.js 101 example and you got these resource limits because you opened too many file descriptors or you opened too many database connections, we're now at the point where actually that's the problem you're going to hit with Django, is that you're going to find, oh, I've got too many database connections open. But that's the place we want to be. So then the next thing is, well, okay, we need a DB pool, a connection pool. So you use PG Bouncer if you're on Postgres. But, well, what about the other databases? Well, okay, so at some point soon-ish, Django will grow a DB pool for the four native supported databases with a, you know, an API for other database backends to be able to support a connection pool as well. There, that's kind of really exciting. So that's where it's going, and that's exciting on async land. The feature I'm most excited about is that model constraints can now be validated in full clean. So In your database layer, you can say an age field. Say you've got a minimum age. You say the age can't be less than 15. I don't know, for, you know, some no children allowed. So higher than 15. Say you can set that constraint on your model, and that will be a database constraint. So the database will enforce that. But now that can be validated when you're in a form. Say, and so you won't get what you might have had before is the database constraint in place. Your form says is valid true, but then you go to save and you get an integrity error. No, those constraints will come into validators on the form level. And that's
actually cool.
Going to be,
I mean,
it's going to be
really cool. If you've done forms, that's really cool. It may sound abstract, but I've hit that, that's a big thing.
And then the form rendering has updated as well. So we've got new div-based forms, form templates, which are got more modern standards. So for instance, they group related elements in radio lists in field sets with legends and things like that, which make them much more accessible for people with screen readers and whatnot. And that's an easy opt-in with a form renderer, but those templates will become the default from Django 5.0. You can still use the old templates, they're not going anywhere, but the form rendering changes over Django 4.0 and 4.1 are just amazing. We're at the point where libraries like Crispy Forms or Floppy Forms, the need for those is going to drop away. And then there's an interesting question, what's left? Because, say, for instance, Crispy Forms has dynamic form layouts where you can build your form in Python. And sometimes that's much nicer. You know, you want to construct your form in Python and then output it. But just the template packs, you're not going to need those. You're going to be able to just change your form renderer at the top project level and say, my Bootstrap form renderer, and you'll be able to use that as your form renderer class and provide all the right templates so that you get the Bootstrap styles or the, you know, the Tailwind styles or whatever your
Will they just become more like template based then? Less code, so more template?
So exactly, that's it. So 4.0 moved the actual form element rendering, the form rendering from hard-coded strings plus the widgets were form were template-based to all the form rendering was template-based. And then 4.1 has added this much easier customization, so it can just be done at the you can either do it at the project level with form renderer, or you can do it per form class, or you can even do it per form instance, like changing the templates. And so it's really cool. It's good stuff. It's like, you know, every release, I'm literally blown away by how much new stuff we have in it. You think, oh, there's going to be nothing for the new one. No, there's masses. And we're already planning 4.2 now already. We're starting to think excitedly about that. So anyway, that was last week. That was the feature freeze last week. And I'll just say one more thing. This week, after the feature freeze, after 4.81, I've had on my list for ages to get back to async stuff. And this week, I finally, you know, cleared the decks. I'm like, okay, I can start taking on these tickets on Daphne and on channels and on Django. And it's like, I can spend summer working on, you know, lots of exciting async stuff that's been on the back burner for a long time.
And that's why you're a Django fellow, is that statement right there. Lots of exciting async work.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
So speaking of updates, Django REST framework, you're also very involved in that. And we had discussions because you're not Tom, but, you know, he kind of said recently, like, not really taking new contributions. Is there anything you want to add on DRF?
No, I mean,
it does what it does.
It's feature complete, basically, was Tom's point. And it has been for quite a while. And
yeah.
Tom, I think, is at the moment at the point where he'd take inputs to keep it compatible with upcoming versions of Django. You know, if changes in Django require changes in Django REST framework, then great, we'll have those. But Django REST framework itself is not in the position to add in new features. The last new feature we tried to add, we just never had the capacity to finish through, was the Open API schema work, which we got an okay version going. But the thing you really need to be using there is DRF Spectacular, which is just, you know, just a super implementation. And what was nice was that it took the API that we provided in REST framework and it rode with it and it went, yeah. And it's sort of showing what could have been done if only we'd have had loads of capacity and loads of bandwidth to work on that. So I think Tom's putting the docs, or is at the point of putting in the docs, hey, go and look at DRF Spectacular for that. And then eventually we should be able to deprecate the inbuilt stuff in the schemas sub package in REST framework, and that will keep working, but perhaps move it into a third party package and say, look, you know, the modern version of this is over there, but if you're still using it, it'll still work, no problem, it's not going to break on you, it just isn't actively developed. And then that will make REST framework itself really tight and nicely developed, and then, you know, it's okay for it to mature and grow. And then at the same time, though, a lot of what's important about REST framework can be brought into Django itself. So serialization is one big thing. And for that, I'm really excited by Django Readers, which, you know, we had Jamie from Dab Apps the show. Go and check out that show again. Go and check out Django Readers. It's great for serialization. And then the other thing that REST framework really does is the content negotiation. It'll let you handle REST JSON requests, so your content type application JSON. And so what we'd like to do is bring request passing, body passing in. So you add a request.data property, which says, you know, if it's form encoded, you'll get request.post as you always have. But if it's JSON encoded, you'll get a dictionary back that goes via JSON load. You know,
I've wanted this for so long. The DRF features that come back, even view sets, which I don't know, it's popular to hate on, but they're so good.
Well, but there's no reason why there couldn't be just a little package which had, you know, just literally a CRUD view set in it. But what I think the thing that needs to be in core is the ability to respond differently to different mind types. So this is HTML, this is JSON. And if we could respond to those, that would be the 99 case. If that's pluggable, so you can respond with a YAML parser or TOML, or great. But if we had HTML, plain text, JSON, that's almost all the web requests, web responses you ever send, right? And all the request bodies you ever get. So that's what we'd like to do. And then, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, the last is then Adam Johnson's got this this pending PR to update the request object to make it more modern, give it a slightly more modern API with, you know, the uppercase get and the uppercase post being a bit of a hangover from the old days. And that nearly went in, and Maris and I were a bit like, but that's a massive change, a really disruptive change without any features. It's just literally a cosmetic change, and it would affect everything. The diff was massive. If we can get the request parsing in as well, the content negotiation in as well, then it's not just a change for change's sake. It's a change with a whole load of feature goodness to go to justify and to go with it. That's kind of what's on my list is the async work plus that kind of request modernization, request data type stuff. I think Maris is very much focused on things like, ORM, Cycle PG3, DB connection pool, these kind of ideas, you know, can we get those in as well? So it's just a really positive time.
That's great.
I'll say one more thing and I'm going to shut up because my throat's starting to get dry. But I think we're really seeing now the maturity of the API stability policy and the move to the new request, the number in scope is 2.0, 2.1, 2.2 is the LTS. And then we've maintained the stability from 2.2 to 3.2. And, you know, the upgrade cycle is really easy. And because we've got the stability policy, it's like, okay, this is a given space and time for Django to keep growing. And, you know, then with the async starting to mature, it's like, oh, wow, this is a positive and rewarding time to be working with Django, I think.
We're all a little biased on this podcast, but
yeah, anyway,
I'd agree with that.
So anyway, I've just talked solidly for 20 minutes.
Well, I was just thinking, like, I'm definitely the color commentator in our relationship, Carlton, because it's like, oh, there's a deep question. Let's throw it over to the fellow.
Well, no, I mean, okay. I didn't know this much was coming in 4.1, so to me, it's enlightening to know this. As far as DRF goes, model serializers are so underappreciated. I'm doing a project for a client today, like now, where I had to deal with CSV data, and it was just so much easier to do all my validation through model serializers for it, even though it's CSV. And then there's a third-party project that adds CSV, handling. And then it was funny, I was writing tests for it. I'm like, why is my response codes all messed up? And then I viewed the output and actually returned it as CSV. So I was getting status code and description. And it was amazing. I'm like, oh, this is horrible and great at the same time. Because, of course, status codes would come back in CSV format versus, you know, JSON or whatever. But the extendability. So, like, the hard part, I think, is what will Django take from routes? I feel like will be interesting to see because, Tom had this beautiful playground of coming up with all these concepts that he couldn't do in Django. And so view sets, I think, are super powerful. Serializers were just a better version of Django's. And then, you know, like you said, the content type, negotiating MIME type negotiations. I don't know. It'll be kind of curious to see the parts that need to go back. This has been my wish list, and I've talked to you all for about it for years. Like, when is DRF going to merge back into Django, or what does this look like? So I think it's exciting.
It is. I think the point you made there about having the playground outside of Django, it's like, that's really important. Like, if you've got an idea and you want a feature in Django, well, implement it outside of Django and show what it looks like. And then maybe, you know, because that's to email the developers list and say, can I have this new feature? The answer is pretty much always no. Whereas if it's like, there's this third party package that I've built and it works really well. And everyone's like, wow, that's amazing. Can we have it? That's a different conversation. Can I ask you two a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I want to ask you about Django News because we've had this last difficult couple of years, and one of the big things holding the community together that's really felt has really given it a kind of sense of continuity when we haven't been able to see each other has been Django News. And I wanted to A, thank you both for that because it's just phenomenal the work you've done, and B, ask you about it and how's it going and what are your thoughts and that sort of stuff.
Well, thank you. That's quite a compliment. I don't really know how to follow up with that after that compliment, actually. Will, you have thoughts?
Yeah, I'm never short on thoughts. Django News is, it's been fun. It's been, I mean, in some ways it was an excuse, Jeff, for us to collaborate more regularly. And it also came out because you, I think even more than me, you just have your finger on the pulse of what's going on with Django packages and things. And it just seemed like we should share that with other people because there isn't a Django newsletter. It's a lot easier to do the newsletter than the podcast. you know, I think like we do it weekly, but it's, you know, I look around and find stuff. You find stuff. We kind of do a little communication on Thursday night, but it's not that hard to do. And if we need to, like, you know, you can take a week off, I can take a week off. So it feels pretty sustainable. We use this platform called Curated. So that handles most logistics. It's a little expensive. I think it's $70 a month now with where we're at with 2,500 plus readers, but we have ads and we have job postings. So it's, you know, it's not a moneymaker for us, but I enjoy doing it. And I do think it helps the community. And I like things that are relatively easy to do, I guess I would say, as opposed to the podcast, which I love doing. But, you know, it's going to take me the rest of today to produce this episode, whereas the newsletter is a little bit faster.
It's definitely low effort and I think high reward as far as like time spent. And so I don't know. We kind of talked about it and the whole idea of like, is this a project we can do in about 30 minutes a week? And for me, it's kind of a byproduct of things I'm already starring and articles we're already seeing. So it's kind of interesting of like what we notice on Twitter. Will was very Twitter adverse for a while, but I guess you're back on Twitter. So you're maybe seeing this stuff again, or maybe you were lurking before from a...
I was lurking.
Okay. So, you know, go ahead.
Email me if you want to talk. I prefer email to Twitter stuff, but I try
to... If I never get another email again, I think I'd be happy, except for our newsletters.
But yes, yeah, there's, you know, in some ways I'm surprised that we're able to find 2 to 4 high quality projects every single week. I mean, there's just so much stuff out there. I mean, we don't repeat things. It's pretty amazing. I keep wondering, well, we're going to run out of projects, or there's not going to be new stuff to feature. But between all the Django things happening with the fellows, and then Python has things, and people have articles and tutorials, and Django Girls is now having a podcast. You know, there's it feels good to kind of wrap it together, and it gives, you know, us an excuse to look around more than we normally would for what's out there.
Yeah, I think plus with the cadence of Python too is. You know, I know there's some relationship between Django's release process and Python's, but there's just enough going on with new Pythons and versions. And if we can help move the needle a little bit so people know, like, it is okay to use Python 3.10 or start testing with 3.11, then that's super valuable. And I hope that influences people to try these things out and update their CI. And, you know, if there's something that we think is cool, I'm super opinionated about stuff like HTMX. I've said for a while, like, use this. This is gold. Even though I've maybe done 1 or 2 projects with it. So like anything like that, that kind of helps move the needle back that Django is good. Let's give you examples by showing you something that maybe will inspire you to write something or use a library. Then that's where I get fulfillment.
Yeah. Seeing it.
I think that the, sorry, go ahead, Carlton.
Go on, I was just going to pick up on the Python release process. That we're sort of, go on.
I was just going to briefly say that my major concern when we started the newsletter was being in a curator position sometimes isn't ideal because you have to say yes and no to things. And it's been far better than I feared it might be in terms of when people submit a project or an article or something, or we see something, you know, people kind of understand where we say, you know, it works or it doesn't work. Like, we're trying to be a positive voice here, but we do have to curate it. I sort of envision more negative interactions on that front, and there basically haven't been any. You know, same thing with Awesome Django repo that Jeff and I do, that it's now over 5,000 stars. You know, it's hard to say no, but the whole value is in saying no and trying to enforce some degree of maturity in the things that we promote. Anyways, that's all I was gonna say.
And Awesome Django is probably harder because, like, since we're curating, it's not like this is a fact thing. So if we include a link that is not great, but it's not bad, then that's okay too. Like, you know, you never know, you know, like you said, there's 2,600 people who subscribe to the newsletter. And if one article appeals to 100 people, great, but there's no pressure that, you know, there could be bummers and that's fine. Awesome Django is interesting in that I feel like it becomes this, like, you can't use Django in your product name more than anything. So we kind of joke about that probably on the side about like the number of like trademark issues that sometimes come out of Django, which.
Well, people, yeah, submitting like paid software packages, which, you know, then becomes a trademark thing, which then the DSF has to deal with. So
there's probably more like agony with it than Django news.
So Awesome Django is a bit like a honey trap for trademark infringements, right?
Yeah.
Unintentionally, exactly. Yeah, it kind of becomes that sometimes.
Give us something to fill the meeting with, yeah.
But please put please put this note in your footer and ask the DSF before you do this. Like, this looks cool, but, you know, you can't just name your project Django, Django, Django.
Django, Django, Django. Can I ask you one more question, Jeff, about Django packages? Because that just came up there previously, you've been working...
Well, you didn't want to mention your Python thing? You had a Python thought, Carlton.
No, well, the Python thought was just to what Jeff picked up about what Jeff's saying about the relation between Django releases and Python releases. It's a bit like, at the moment, we're in a... Well, I feel that we're in a bit of an interesting time because they've moved to this annual release cycle. What that means is that at any given point, there are basically 5 supported versions of Python active at any one time. So 3.6 has just died. 3.7 will die in October, but then out will come 3.11, and it's 3.8, 3.9, 3.10, 3.11. And so for the Django LTSs, we kind of have to end up supporting all 5 of them because people will be like, I'm on the LTS and this new version of Django has come out. Can you please support it? I think we've said that 4.0 will be the first version to support 3.11. So Django 3.2 probably won't support 3.11, but we've had this problem before whereas, you know, month after month, people are asking to support the old the new version of Python, even though they're on the old version of Django. It's like, this is hard. This is really, you know, I'd like to get to a point where we can support, say, 3 or something. Like, you know, the last 3 years worth of Python or something.
Maybe we can apply for a PSF grant, Carlton.
I don't know. I mean, if it's just the CI that bothers me. We run this absolutely massive matrix of the same tests again and again and again. And there doesn't seem to be a very clever way of saying, well, only run this one if that one passes. You know, do you see what I mean? Because, you know, you're running 50 builds and it takes an hour and a half. And it's like, that's too long. That's, you know, I just push a docs change. Anyway, that was the only thought about the Python release cycle. It's tricky to know what to support. I feel like there's ways to deal with CI
that's, even though it's annoying, if it's like running certain things at different times, you don't have to run the full thing. I mean, I know that it's viewed that you have to run the full test suite every time somebody updates a README, but with CI now, it's gotten easier to only run tests when you need to or what's appropriate. But I mean, yeah, to your point, I think that it's gotten a lot easier to go somewhere around Python like 3.7, 3.8, moving to 3.9, 3.10, 3.11 has been very... I've yet to have libraries just fail because you switch versions. I suspect Django is going to get more like that too. And it's probably more about, you know, with the depreciation messages and stuff, you're probably going to be able to, I don't know. They should at least be showing up on CI. So I think, yeah, the tooling needs to change a little bit about it. And I feel sorry for authors because, you know, I've heard people complain for years about how much like changing versions of Django impacts their book titles and makes their content out of date. So like, it's even worse, I'm sure, for people writing Python books today, but I don't know the solution.
Oh no,
to it.
Like, I have no sympathy for Python people. No sympathy. It doesn't update every 8 months. No sympathy.
I mean, you could name it like 4-ish, you know, Django 4-ish for professionals or.
It's like how to comment. I mean, I'm like the only Django book author left. I mean, who's been here for a while. Adam Johnson is still updating, but it is I'd like to say it's beyond my control, but I guess it's somewhat in my control. But you know, I don't. It's a technical decision. It would be nice if, you know, it would make more sense for newcomers if 4.0 was the LTS and you could just be 4.0 point da da da. The 0.2 doesn't help book authors. But I know that it's relatively new to have that whole system. And as Carlton mentioned, it really helps the development. So it's not all about the book authors, even though, yeah, that would be easier if a book, you know, didn't go out of date so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard problem and it's a maturity problem. I suspect we'll figure it out, or there'll be a better way of laying things out, or maybe it flips at some point. Maybe by Django 7 or something, the LTS lands on a zero. Like, I don't, these are solvable problems. I think it just hasn't been obvious what the friction is, but you know, the more you talk about it on your podcast, then.
Well, what's Python? Python's just going to be like, you know, 3.50. Like, when does it go to 4? Does it ever go to 4?
Because of the resistance to go from 2 to 3 took so long. It took like 80 years or something like that. It's a long time. Predates Python's origin even.
Full 10 years, yeah.
So I think because of that, there's apprehension to go to Python 4. But my theory, and this is completely made up, is I think that there's no way in the world you're going to have a language called Python that has, you know, PY in it, that they would switch over to Python 4 before they could have Python 3.14. So they're going to land on Pi, and then I suspect at some point someone's going to say, Python 3.85 is weird. Let's just finally match dates or do something. So I think it'll flip at some point. The point is to get this cadence down so it's so much low effort that when they switch from Python, let's say 3.14 to Python 4, then it'll be such low friction, low effort that we're not going to have this whole, you know, the grief that we've had in agony before. I still have Python 2 clients that, you know, we do porting jobs. Probably 2 or 3 people at RevSys are doing porting jobs at any given point in time because there is so much Python 2 code out there. And, you know, other than like security is a good reason, but if you've got millions of lines of Python 2 code, we didn't really give people a compelling reason to switch other than we want to work on Python 3. And that's totally, totally valid. But, you know, companies kind of get a bad rap, I think, sometimes for saying, you know, you wrote this code in this thing and things are stable and you're supporting features and stuff. But when you're trying to flip a million lines of code over because of print statements and stuff, I mean, it's kind of silly in my opinion, but eventually you got to do it. And there's compelling, cool features and great things that have come out of being stuck on versions. What is it? Django 2.0, I think, was the last 2.7 release.
It might have been 1.11. Was it
1.11? Yeah, maybe 1.11.
We could look it up. Something like that.
Oh, I have. I remember when I deleted my CI, my local test environment for Python 2.7. I was the happiest person. That's the happiest person.
It's great, but people are still all stuck on that island, right?
So yeah, like, you know, entirely.
Do people entirely. Was it Red Hat has some Python 2? Somewhat supported version. Do people use that kind of stuff at all? These company supported Python 2 things, right? I think it's Red Hat.
Yeah, I forget. That, right? There's a particular version of Red Hat I think a lot of them use, but we tend to just put them over in Docker, and then that way they can run the old in a new environment, and they don't have to worry about, you know, 20-year-old or 80-year-old servers running because those are pretty crusty. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Have you got time for my Django
packages? Yeah, Django packages.
I just wanted to ask you about Django packages because there's sort of a couple of the old sites that are out there. There's Django snippets and Django packages, which are sort of old ecosystem things that are still going and, you know, still being kept up to date. And I wondered, I've seen you tweet a lot and you've done a lot of work on it.
Updated it, yeah.
Are you getting contributors as well? Because that was the thing. And do you want contributors? And one of the reasons I'm keen on these old sites is that they're sort of real Django applications that you can have a look at the source code and poke around and see, you know, how they're built rather than just, you know, academic exercises, like, you know, learning exercises.
I think I got it updated to Django 4.0. So to me, it's pretty cloudy. We had some really good momentum going, and then we had a baby, and then I kind of, you know, I keep up with it and keep patches, and I've got a bunch of like get stash code for some features I want to change. The code was in excellent shape. So other than like some linting and random stuff, and then I've been kind of making. I do what I do at RevSys, like look for patterns of what's maybe broken or what's not so much broken, but like performance issues. And I've been slowly kind of like every couple of Fridays or something, I'll spend half a day or day and just like kind of devote to, you know, what can I fix? Like, can I fix search? And there's been some spam issues and stuff because, you know, curation is really hard on it. And then right now we still have too many packages and grids. And so I've kind of been, just slowly iterating on it and stuff to try to like, make it a more solvable problem. I think for a project that was created back in like the original, was the original Django Dash or the second Django Dash or something when Danny and Audrey created it. And then what has it been like 12 years or something since? It's a cool site. I think Django Snippets doesn't get enough love either. I'm certainly don't give it enough love. So I would love to see y'all, you know, maybe bring a maintainer on or talk about it.
And well, the ops I team still sort of maintains it. Like I get ops team emails and there's stuff on Snippets.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's
it definitely needs a Jeff to come in and give it. Love,
I think
I
they have one. I think somebody's doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, whoever you are. I'm sorry. I'm just out of the loop.
Well, that's just it. I think, yeah, it needs more attention. And you
we
know,
should bring the, we should ask bring that person on.
Yes, and I wish I could just remember their name right now. Apologies for that.
Oh my God, who's?
It's Chris Redwood. Sorry, yeah. I was just. Oh man, it just totally.
Chris, I'm
out.
So sorry.
Yes, Chris
needs to be on.
No, he does, Chris. But Chris stepped forward a while back and was like, "Look, I'm happy to, you know, because a lot of it's just like merging the updates and keeping going. But it's like, okay, he's done a really good job of cleaning up the backlog and keeping it going. And then, you know, he's even asking, you know, well, what features do we want? What can we do? And I think it's a great. It's a lovely opportunity for, you know, I want to get involved, work on a little project. It's not high stakes in terms of, you know, you don't have to be intimidated by it. You can just work on a little feature, add a thing, work with contributors, work in on GitHub. It's a nice opportunity for, I can get my toe wet in open source. And it's a lovely little application, and it's a real Django app that's been uptime of forever and just been it's been hosted on Heroku, and they've done very well, and we're no doubt going to have to move it at some point. But it's, you know, I love that it's still going, and we had to shut down Django People because we couldn't keep that going. And that was an old app from the old days, and it was just the thing is we had was it this European legislation, GDPR issues, and people weren't able to update their personal data. And it's like, well, you know, is this even legal now to have this site? I don't know. And then there were spam issues. And so we had to shut that one down, but to be able to keep Django Snippets going. And it's, you know, it's a cute little thing. And there's some genius little, if you dig through it, and how do I customize the choices in a form in it? Based on the current request. It's on Django Snippets. There's a perfect example of that from, you know, 2000, whenever.
Well, this is a broader issue, but I mean, we should feature things that are official-ish on the Django project site, right? Like on the Django community page, Snippets isn't there. You wouldn't know that it's what
official-ish,
it is.
Yes. Yes.
Except, right, so that's the larger Docs Fellow thing that Carlton and I talk about.
Yeah. I think it's a good resource. And Django packages too is one that I used every week. I almost use it daily. And so for me, like putting some time into it to maybe fix search or get it up to date with Django 4. And it really didn't take a lot of work to do that. Once I get kind of more back on my feet, and it's kind of hard with DjangoCon. So part of like doing snippets or sorry, part of doing Django packages was a good excuse for me to dive into more open source code, a little less community stuff, and kind of give me something to buy some time and, you know, fix issues that I fix for clients and give me a place that if somebody I get requests all the time for people who want me to help mentor them. And it's so hard. I don't have the time. And I thought, well, maybe I can throw out an issue on GitHub and point people to it. And maybe we update the docs and make it an easier experience so people can give back if they want to. And then maybe I can use that as a good way to, you know, have a quick win. But yeah, if people want to contribute, we had, I think, 100 issues, and I think I got it down to 12 or 13. Granted, GitHub has discussions, so probably 3/4 of those I shifted to discussions. I don't want to butcher his name, but there's a Fabio who also works on the project too. He's one of the maintainers. Look at the footer. Sorry to butcher names. I don't want to butcher names. But like, so there's more than just me working on the site. I'm probably doing most of the main lead stuff now just because of time. Both of us had kids in the last year, so you know how that goes. But yeah, I would love to see it grow. I want to change the default grids to be more list-based and then give you more of a comparison, because those grids that are 100, 200 wide are just too much. And then there's a pretty big spam update coming up. And, you know, part of it, like, too, is we are starting to filter out projects that are 12 and 14 years old. I didn't want to immediately remove all of those so that, you know, some old packages wouldn't be accessible. And so, yeah, there'll be some quality of life updates. I saw a project the other day. I don't want to mention their name, but somebody kind of had a, like, this is like Django packages, but curated. And I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. But again, this gets into another trademark issue probably with the DSF. So I hate to bring it up. I love seeing those sites exist, though. Yes. So I think it's neat when people are like, here's a thing plus this. But just be careful with what you name your projects. The DSF doesn't like sending those emails. Like, I don't think Will enjoys. That's not what Will wakes
it's
up
not
every
just
day
me,
and say.
But yeah, it's one of the things I least enjoy is being the enforcer of that. But, you know, needs to be. Haim on the board is also very helpful.
Just ask first.
I had one last thing to plug that sort of relates, Jeff, you and I have talked about. So Django X is the starter project I have had for a while that I just updated to 4.0. Has over 1,000 stars, which I guess is good. It's a lightweight starter project. You can just get up and going with pip, pipenv, docker, white noise, bootstrap, Django debug toolbar, and crispy forms, and all auth. So deliberately very lightweight, not cookie cutter. Cookie cutter is amazing, but designed to be somewhere in between. So people should check that out. And also, you know, Jeff, you and I have talked about our, you know, potentially collaborating on our own version of like a premium version of that, which is one of these interesting, but is it worth the time kind of thing to do? Like, I mean, so I guess I'll tee that up to you as a question. I know at RevSys, you have an internal kind of template you use, right? Like, is there anything you could talk about? What do you like to see in a starter template project?
I like to see batteries, but not every battery possible. Like, there's some really, really good cookie cutter templates that I see a lot of people use, but there's so much inside them sometimes that it's not, like, it's not as useful for stuff. RevSys has one we called AlphaKit, and we've kind of toyed around with, like, opening it up, too. And so our problem is the industry is hit, and it's so, I guess, hot right now as far as, like, we've got more work than we have people for, but we also know that the market will correct itself or can change. And so it puts us in a bind where, like, we would love to be able to spend time working on products or this type of thing. But, you know, like, what do? You take on client work while you have client work. And then if we can get in a lull, maybe we'll work on something.
It's like going to grad school.
Yeah. So, you know, things are great. I hope things continue. But, you know, we would rather be a little too busy than not busy or have to lay somebody off or something. So that's probably more inside baseball than the casual person who listens to your podcast would care to hear. But yeah, I think in general, starter projects, I think, are great. I think there's a couple of people who've tested it. I like to see what all the other communities are doing. Laravel is doing some really awesome stuff for a while. And that's kind of, you know, when you have somebody who creates a framework and then they decided that it was okay to make money by doing all these products that are adjacent to it. And so I think I showed Will like my idea playbook like 3 years ago, which is like, I think there needs to be a good newsletter. I think there needs to be a good news site. I think there needs to be like a good starter project. I think there needs to be a good button out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well,
like,
right. I mean, that's what Laravel makes its money on, the starter project, but really on deployment. And he's, Taylor's
Laravel Forge is 4 or 5 million a year, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, so, I mean, those are the two ways you do it. You hosting and a starter kit and really probably hosting.
Yeah. And again, like, it's not really, they're not necessarily doing hosting. They're kind of deploying your app for you.
Right.
And so the hard part of Django is deployment, which, you know, smart people at Carleton and I think, Pete from Lincoln Loop. And, I just listened to I just listened to the podcast the other day, and it's interesting. I've kind of like, you know, kicked the tires on these apps to see kind of what they do, except for Button. I mean, I think like there's a whole healthy industry here that, you know, don't be afraid to start these companies or try these things out and stuff. Just get permission first if you use Django in your URL. That's really my only advice, or your domain.
SaaS Pegasus, which is probably the dominant paid starter project, you know, Corey was very good about checking and it does not have Django in it, so it's fine, for example.
Yeah, and I think it's good to have competition in these areas too. So, you know, this makes everybody better because it's such a huge industry. I think people think that it's like, you know, 2,600 people that follow the newsletter. There's 10,000 times more of that people. Oops, hit my mic. 10,000 times more people that are part of the Django community or that use Django. We probably only get what we call the community or probably a very small piece of the pie of the overall people who use Django.
the biggest competitor is non-consumption, right? People just, they don't have a solution. And so it's not that there's a saturated market or anything like that. Like there's room for a billion options.
Tons of room. Like there's, I don't know if there's a dozen Django shops or something, consulting agencies, but we're friends with everybody. Like it's been such a big market and stuff. And I've never felt like there's been competition. Like sure, we may put bids on the same stuff, but overall, I mean, there's always more work than any of us can do. And it's, you know, a lot of great people running a lot of Django shops. So, you know.
And there's big shops too. I mean, I met someone at the playground yesterday or last week at who had been at JB Software. I think he said they had like 100 people, something like that. You know, they're a sponsor of Django. You know, I mean, because RevSys is relatively boutique, actually. There are these really large shops out there.
Yeah, I think JBS is JBS, my friend yeah. Adam Fast, who's part of Defna. He works for them, I believe. Yeah, and I don't know that they have that many Django or Python devs. They probably have 4 or 5 or something. And again, that's probably made up numbers. But they do a lot of, I think, .NET and different stuff. So nice plug for them, by the way.
They're a sponsor, so they you know.
It's all good. I was not being facetious.
Sorry, Carlton, what were you saying?
Well, this doesn't matter. There's any agency that you work at. There's like, you know, two Django devs and then two front JavaScript hands and then two designers and then a business development fella. And then, you know, it goes
I
on
think
and
I've
on.
Worked with every agency in our space over the years. Like we've either co-worked on projects together. Or there's been a couple where we've hired their devs and I've like been either lead or project managed on. And that's the same thing. I've worked with other shops too because they needed help. So we are very good friends in this industry. And, you know, the problem has just been really getting people. So,
well, Jeff, thank you for taking the time. And I enjoy these somewhat rambling discussions. But I think between the three of us, we cover a bit of ground in the Django community. So it's interesting to me. And I think hopefully fills in others on all these things we talk about that maybe we don't talk about publicly.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate being on your show and appreciate that you all keep doing it. I know it's more work than a newsletter, but hopefully you can get it down to.
Well, we have one more Eric Holscher from Read the Docs is coming on, and then we're going to take the summer off. We'll put out old episodes and start up in the fall. So with Carlton's nice. Mentoring, I've, you know, that's how we keep doing it is
that's how we do Europe. That's how we do the summer in Europe. It's like, you know, it's too hot.
I know,
for,
right? That's amazing.
It's too hot for working.
You know, Read the Docs is another Django Dash project, too. I think it came out the same time as Django Packages. Somebody should redo Django Dash.
Yeah. Someone from Defna, maybe.
Defna's got too much going on.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We are DjangoChat.com, ChatDjango on Twitter, and we'll see everyone in 2 weeks and then in the fall. So see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.